Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
A week before elections, we've covered a lot of that last segment, so you can catch it.
That's true.
Later on his, the ways that you spit it out there.
I want everybody to weigh the amount of campaign mail you get week and report it. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually,
you were mentioning at the city council. We haven't talked about city council meeting, right? That's okay.
Well, a little bit we did.
But one of the interesting things, and this actually does relate to politics in a way, so there was a big contingent of people up at City Hall last night.
And it wasn't a long public comment, but all of it was about woof woof.
The meeting went to the dogs. So it was, there was more than one city council order relating to dogs.
There was part of the city agenda on a pilot.
Yeah. But I think the previous week there was a couple of things having to do with dog parks and dog related here.
Yeah.
I remember, and I won't get name names here, but I remember a very prominent activist some years ago who was supportive of a particular candidate who said to me flat out, and he was correct. He says, there's a lot of political capital to be had amongst dog owners.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like there are several things that people can often feel passionate about. Once upon a time, cable TV was one of them until we lost the ability to do anything about it other than to kneel before Comcast and beg, right? But the thing is that your kids, your money, right, and your dogs. I mean, you want to see people get really, really, active. They care about these things. They're real bread and butter issues. They're kind of the real basic stuff.
I'm just amazed. And it motivates voters. Dogs, period. But in the city, but that's me.
Yeah, but the thing is,
had a pet. Did you have a pet growing up?
Did I have pets?
You had dogs.
When I was a little kid, we had dogs. Then we had cats. Then we had a lot of cats because they all had kittens.
Oh, gosh.
We had African rock toads. We had about 16 or more fish tanks in the basement. We had hamsters. Yeah. We had gerbils. I had a boa constrictor, a black rat snake.
So how come you have no pets? You don't have a cat or anything?
I had a cat for 19 years.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right.
But the thing is, but not now. No pets now. Honestly, if you have to sort of be there for your pets. And if you're kind of in and out a lot, you probably shouldn't have a pet because you really, they need people too. So
what are you saying then about dog owners?
They're very passionate about
dogs. No, but obviously, who's taking care of the dogs then?
Wasn't Tan Devereaux the dog lady in the Cambridge Chronicle before she was a candidate?
Oh, maybe.
See?
Not the bike lady?
Smart gal.
Wait, bike lady, dog lady, she got it all.
Yeah, well, listen, these things motivate people,
trees,
right?
Yeah.
It's good. I'm not suggesting this. This is just more of recognition of what is. It's not about being manipulative. This is these people are passionate. You should pay attention to them, you want to really see people get passionate when people have young children in the Cambridge Public Schools. They're the ones that really take an interest in these school committee elections as well.
Right.
You get to know all about these
candidates. Do they
show
up at the school committee meetings?
It's like watching paint dry or people argue. It's one or the other.
Well, you could say that about city council too. But
well, that's true too. Yeah. We could do better, honestly. I think we need to somehow ratchet up the intellectual level at city council meetings.
Well, no, that's not fair.
The thing is that they tend to jump from hot issue to hot issue.
It's all matter of what's on the agenda. There's going to be a lot of policy orders because people are politicking.
Which people are stepping up to the microphone.
And public comment.
And it's not just the public comment. It's the letter
public
writing.
Public comment, right. You can get your constituency out. You get them out for the housing. You get them out for the dogs. You get them out for the trees. You get them out for bikes.
Yep.
Average person doesn't know what's going on. I'm not talking about uneducated. I'm talking about anybody. You're lucky if they know about it. It's always, don't say that that's representative of everybody. That's all.
That's really true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true.
And but there was not one person that was against the pilot for dogs in that. What is it, Sacramento Field? What is it?
I should wear a disguise. I should show up and go, why are you people talking about these damn dogs?
No.
Yeah, just gotta create a counterbalance.
Well, apparently this has been in the works for a long time. A pilot. I guess it's been on the
I remember there was a working group when they talked about having off leash
right.
off hours or parks right. where dogs weren't allowed, but
that's right.
during Could the hours in the when early morning there, when nobody's right. there, then why shouldn't it be available for the dog as long as they pick up after
them? Well, then obviously somebody's
them.
Home then to take the dog to the park then.
You know, City of Cambridge sometimes is really good at initiating processes that then go nowhere or end up. Remember, whatever happened to the outdoor lighting ordinance?
Yeah. No. Right? Well, that just got forgotten. Well, I think actually we're laughing, but that isn't that been brought up either by Carl or somebody about.
Well, there are a few counselors.
The way this whole thing works, way that city is working, it's not working.
To their credit, there are some counselors, Councilor Devereaux in particular, who's basically been saying, "Hey, whatever happened to this?"
Yeah, and or she'll go back and say, "We discussed this 4 years ago.
Yeah,
we discussed this 3 years ago.
Yeah,
And if you look at the awaiting report list, I mean, it's crazy, but. You know, I don't think people, you put these policy orders in and it just gets filed. It means it has to be then dealt with by some committee, by some department, and you keep piling them in. I mean, maybe there should be a limit of how many policy orders you can do every week. I don't know.
Or else a little, maybe some city councilors could step up and and just say, "Mr. City Clerk, could you please remove the following items that have been waiting for report because they are either moot or I'm not interested anymore, or I'm acknowledging
the fact that
stuff
can happen." Yeah, but what if it's a city council is not even on the board anymore?
There are actually items
on
a waiting report that were from orders from Councillor Leland Chung, who hasn't been on the council
for
2 terms. So
why isn't that automatic? Is there nothing in the charter?
Because at the end of the year, one councillor says, at the end of a term, the council says, "I'd like to hold this one over because I want something to happen."
And they all held all these over? There's at least 60,
aren't there? A lot of them
are
held over.
Wow.
Well, some of them are during the current council term, too. But,
really?
But the thing is,
there seems to be a lot.
You know, if the man, you know, buy a clue. If the manager is absolutely, if the manager is taking 8 months to 2 years or 4 years to respond, maybe he's already sent you the message.
But that's not right. There should be a report saying we cannot do this.
I have always felt that the manager should just do the cursory one line. We do not have any intention to address this at this
or
time.
Or how we've looked into it and this isn't feasible, and then they can refile it or whatever.
I agree. And just
I do think that a response, though, is requested. It said a waiting response.
I agree.
So,
I agree.
You know,
letting things just languish there under the,
is not a good message.
The pretense that you're actually going to get back. let me get back to you on that. Right?
Yeah. No, it's not good.
So
what else? Sorry, so that was a big thing, and I guess that got passed unanimously.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty lightweight agenda, generally
speaking.
Except
for the money to hire a consultant for...
Well, there was a big kettle of money assigned for the foundry, and it was...
All right, you're going to go to that. Okay.
Yeah, well, I was going to say much about it, because I didn't really hear what they had to say too much about it, but I'm always reminded...
Well, that's part of the original commitment.
That's true, right?
So.
And I have no flies on the operators that they chose. I think it's I forget the name of the group, Lemelson or something.
Yeah,
really, you know, good. They're good.
Yeah.
But the thing is that Bob Healy said when we got the gift of the foundry, as soon as he heard it, his first words were, "This is going to be a problem."
Because money it's gonna take.
The moment you get a resource like a new building, counselors are going to start competing for,
"We want this
I want it to be used for my favorite stuff," or I think Leland Chung wanted it to become new place for startups. Mazin wanted it to be a clubhouse for maker spaces.
Well, I think they're getting
whatever.
All of that, actually.
Right, but the thing is, how many years in, right? It was basically, there was this sort of mashup of all these various wish lists from individual counselors. You know, in a way, this is supposed to be a city resource, not a city council resource, so to whatever degree we've successfully removed the politics out of it and the political wish list out of it, the better. Mm. But, but Bob was right. This was going to be a problem.
Yeah, but so
but
far
could be a
I think
resource.
It's going to be good.
Hopefully it won't be a money pit.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. Yeah. $23 million. Yeah. But that's already been the appropriate. Right. But that's already was discussed.
I know. But the costs always do go up.
And then people were, the McConnell Library improvement, and said that a lot of good things were happening in terms of money.
Yeah.
And then, but what I was going to bring up was that the appropriation for 300 for a consultant to do strategic and technical advisory services to position the city to procure a 100% renewable energy electricity supply. So Dennis Carlone and Quentin. Well, Quentin wanted to know, why can't we have this done this year, blah, blah, blah. And then Carlone was really on, I'm pretty sure this was brought up a while ago, why are we just hiring a consultant? And he was kind of angry at the, sort of getting what you're getting at, why is there such delay in what we asked for and by the time we get to it and all that stuff. But my point was that finally, you know, Quentin brought up that there are 6 cities that already have this and more in the way. And I just wanted to do some research because I was curious. So Sierra Club had them listed and then I went to look at them. And most of them are west of the Mississippi. The biggest one is in Texas. And there's a whole article about him in the Smithsonian. And it's 77,000 people, but they have a lot of wind and solar there. And it's like 24 square miles or something. I mean, these places are big. Burlington is the only East Coast community, 45,000, that has it. And San Francisco is looking into it, Oakland, a lot of places, but it is complicated. Oh, also, wait, the thing about it, was it Texas or the one in Kansas? The one in Texas, they own the utility, which is also crucial to a lot of these things. When you own the supplier.
Most municipalities in Massachusetts do not own a public utility.
Right.
There are some.
Yes.
And I think there's legislation still pending to allow municipal
because it helps, because like I said, with the municipal broadband issue, that also, if you look at some of the communities that have it, they own, like Concord, Municipal Light Company, they own it. So I'm just saying there's a lot of factors It's not easy.
It's a tough decision for some municipalities because, you know, if you're, basically, if you're going into business, businesses have risks.
Yes.
And, you know, to whatever degree you can kind of like, just like when we spun the old City Hospital went off as a Cambridge Health Alliance.
Yeah.
That was really done to reduce financial exposure so that any risks in the ups and downs of the healthcare industry were not going to like show up on the city's balance sheet every year and wreak havoc on our bond ratings and our ability to do projects. So there are logical reasons why a rational city manager would be a little cautious about getting into a utility business, or for that matter, even broadband. But I think on balance, that may come around. You know,
well, especially if you can use someone.
You create a nonprofit entity
that is going to run it. Yeah, you're right.
Like the Cambridge Health Alliance.
Yes,
for healthcare.
And that is possible. Yeah. So I think that's more.
There's
doable.
There's a way
almost.
To make it doable. Yeah. You know, but I certainly wouldn't scream and yell at a municipality for being a little cautious about those things.
Let me just say one thing. The mayor of this Georgetown, Texas, said they learned that rates for wind power could be guaranteed for 20 years and solar for 25 years, but natural gas for only 7 years. The choice, the mayor, Ross said, was a no-brainer. So, you know, it depends on where you are and what's available. Texas is like a really big wind generator now. I mean, there's
a lot of hot air in Texas.
That's true. I like that. That was good. That was very good. That was good.
But the thing is there are actually similarities to the recycling business, too, which is that if you're in the middle of the country,
you don't have
access to the port with the foreign markets, or it's more expensive to.
But also, you have land to bury shit.
Right. So the thing is that you got yourself. It's more cost effective to do landfilling in some places where.
Yes.
If you happen to have like a recycling facility that processes paper nearby, then paper recycling is going to be really, really cost effective.
Right.
Transportation costs are like nil. You know, once upon a time, we had a American Can Company, which was Foster Forbes, was down in Milford, I think. Mm. So we had some direct markets for glass processing.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
It were local. And to whatever degree they're not around anymore, then it makes
things are springing up, too, But it was more
an
attitude.
But where you are geographically matters.
It affects what you can, right, that's
true. It's going to make recycling either cost-effective or not. And the same thing, I think, with access to renewable resources. You know, in an ideal world, wouldn't it be great if we had such maximum efficiency that a little panel up on your roof was enough to power your whole house and your neighbor's house, right?
Texas has 25% of all wind power generated in this country is from Texas.
Yeah,
that's a pretty big stat. So
yeah.
It's funny because they're an oil and gas place too, and yet They are doing a lot of other things. It should have a funny.
What about Oklahoma? You know, where the wind comes whipping down the plain.
And California has obviously, they're having so many problems there.
I remember driving through the kind of the hills east of San Francisco going to Yosemite.
Yeah.
And then you come over this hill and then suddenly it's like thousands of wind turbines, you know. And then you go over the next hill, a different type of thing.
I know, in Southern California too. But you know what? The electricity generation has nothing to do with fires being caused by wind, by nature, and so they're turning off their electricity to prevent it.
Yeah.
And what a mess! It's awful. I'm going to watch Frontline's having some special on it tonight at 10. But
yeah.
We have our problems here, but
yeah. So one of the things I do find kind of curious. The thing is that if you've got like lab buildings that are probably going to be more consuming more than they can possibly cover on site.
Which is why they're controversial? Is that why?
No, that's not the only reason. But the thing is that, it's really sort of creative bookkeeping to say that you're like net zero, because you really aren't.
Right.
But you go through sites. But we're going to make up the difference by buying from the wind farms.
But they can also, though, build more energy efficient buildings if they're starting
and they
from
should,
scratch,
and they
I think
do.
They are.
They, for the most
they?
Part, they
like
do,
geothermal
and
all,
all
that?
Of that is that's non-controversial and it's a good idea.
Doesn't MIT have a cogeneration plant?
And they built it a long time ago, and they've been improving on it too.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I think a lot of players in this piece of the landscape here are doing good things. You know, I get a little worried when the mandates start kind of falling down a little too hard, when in fact people are already actually doing right things because
it's
cost effective.
You mean the whole thing with the Eversource and all that? Or
well, I mean, that's another matter. I think,
it's another matter, but
I mean,
we all want the energy.
I think in the short term, especially if you want to move away from local use of fossil fuels, then you have to put more buildings on the grid, electric grid,
right?
Which means that
you're
going
to need to have these.
And even if the voltage is coming from far away renewable sources, you still got to get it here.
Well,
in this
state, 67% in 2 years ago was coming from natural gas, or 1 year ago. So it's still.
Yeah.
Renewables are still down there.
Right.
It's going to take us a while to get up there, but it's coming.
I mean, pardon my iconoclasm here, but the thing is that if transitioning away from natural gas as a generation is that you want to make that mandatory, but it costs everybody's electric bill to double, I'm not okay with that. I think you have to be a little more gradual.
But also you have to see, where is the electricity coming from? People don't understand all this stuff,
So you maximize the best, but you also acknowledge the reality of what is, too.
Isn't there controversy about hydropower and having them come through certain places? Because that's
also
what we're relying on is hydropower.
Or you put a dam in to get hydropower.
Well, this is what's happening.
Then you cut off fish migration, too. You know?
There's
so,
energy is not free. It's not
nothing's free.
It's like you've got to look at the whole.
There are downsides to every good side,
yeah.
And that's just the way it is.
I'm
perfectly happy. Us just simply moving in a relatively deliberate way toward better and better outcomes.
Yeah.
I don't want any more mandates. Just
Or bans.
Bans. Sometimes sure.
Yeah.
But come on. Let's all get on board and move in a good direction.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So we covered. All that.
Yeah. I want to say one more thing on the politics, though, okay? And this
only
is
one?
Just only one. Right. Only one, okay? So this year, data, information I've been putting up on, follow the money, about real estate contributions from unions. I want everybody to understand, because candidates are quoting this stuff. One activist referred to it as, they're weaponizing my data. And I kind of have to agree with that. It's not fair.
Oh, you mean somebody's taking your data and weaponizing? Well, data's data.
Right. But I gotta tell everybody the truth about this.
Okay,
so I put up information about real estate donations, maybe not in 2017, maybe in 15 or 2013, I forget. Mm-hmm. And I put up charts and graphs and all sorts of stuff to kind of wow people.
Here you go.
So I had that there. And then what happened was, people started abusing it, and they were misinterpreting things. It was, so what I did was, people were saying, like, well, you're not including this and you're not including that. There was one particular person who was irate because I did, because Minka von Musicum, so this must have been not 2013 because she wasn't a candidate. So it must have been 2015. She was like, she was dealing, selling real estate. Okay. Well, I should have included contributions from her to Quentin Zondervan or something, because this must have been 2017. Because she's part of the post candidacy because she's part of the real estate industry.
Oh, because she sells it.
Listen,
she's a broker.
So I want everybody to understand this. Oh. You know, who you're quoting my numbers. If somebody's just in the, that's what they do for a living. You know, they're not like.
What if you own a piece of property? Aren't you in the real estate?
Now, see, now people are saying that too. They're saying like if every homeowner should be listed because don't you know they're benefiting by zoning. So
you can look on both
policies.
Sides.
It gets ridiculous, you know. My intention solely was basically to put some information about there about people who had business in front of the council. So that primarily meant if you're a real estate developer who's basically throwing in zoning petitions because you want to get a lot more value out of yours, and you've decided that it's in your best interest to drop $500 or $1,000 on a candidate because you want to kind of get in good with that candidate. Now, they always deny.
But the candidate doesn't have to. They can take it, and they've still.
I know.
Doesn't mean they're going to vote
that way. I know. And as we say in the statistical world, correlation does not imply causation. But the truth is that there is a pretty high correlation between the people who are taking it and the people who are voting a particular way. Now, which comes first, chicken or egg? Because the thing is that if somebody votes the way you like, a year later you say, hey, he was really good for me, so here's some money, you know? But I wasn't ever trying to be. You know, make a big judgment about this. And I also, there were some people who are definitely development who I didn't count because I kind of made a call and I said, well, I don't think this person is giving this money to this candidate because they're trying to influence them. And then I got called out for that.
Wait, let me clarify something. So
I'm not being
sufficiently
transparent.
On this chart,
apparently.
You're taking, you see who's donated and you decide if they're real estate or not?
And
so this is
generally
this is your personal opinion?
There is some, yes, there's my judgment involved
this,
in there.
Can we show this, or do you not
want to
show
it? Oh, yeah, we can do that here.
That.
Yeah, so this is what, so everybody's quoting these numbers.
So,
and I update this like almost every other day or two.
Yeah, you updated it today at 2:03.
I updated it this afternoon, you know. And my intention always from day one was simply to point out the fact that there's a lot of money flowing towards some candidates from unions, which I still can't
fully
get my head around that.
Is it a lot?
Well,
I don't know. The most I see is, here's 14%.
Never mind the percentages.
Yeah.
If you look at it.
But
like,
how much money? We're talking $5,000?
Look, okay.
All right.
So, for example, the mayor.
All right.
Well, combination of unions and real estate.
Yeah, he's
gets
way.
$41,650, which is more than virtually all
other
candidates.
He really does stand out.
Right.
But,
okay.
But he's the mayor, whatever.
Well, that shouldn't be a.
I know.
A
all right. I agree.
Here,
we should have caps. But the next, when you look at some of these small percentages,
exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Exactly. And what I don't like is when people are going after either whether it's Siddiqui or Kelly or whatever because
Mallon,
they took. They got $1,000, $2,000.
Kelly's is on the other side anyway. He wasn't even.
Right.
You know,
so the thing is, if they get some money, why does anybody care about that? That shouldn't be the issue.
I know.
Right? The issue shouldn't be, did this person, you know, in other words, this isn't about getting tainted by money.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly you are now a sinner and you have to go and confess because you took $30.
I mean,
from
these signs that you see, these are all people pro-development and they're taking money from the
big
developers.
I do not like that.
Look at the percentages,
I know, but,
other than a couple,
I agree,
you know, it's
I agree.
Ridiculous.
So organizations shouldn't be selling them saying we're the pure ones. You know, that's bull.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, other organizations shouldn't be saying we are the only ones who support housing because that's bull too.
No, and I think any of the candidates that are, they're not putting it in that kind of extreme. I mean, I just
well, some of the organizations are. I would say that the candidates tend to kind of pull back a bit from the brink. Some of the challengers maybe a bit over the top. I think it's fair to say.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because everybody's trying to get some attention.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's one other candidate who's basically crying out for attention, saying, like, somebody yelled at me because they said, you're not from Cambridge. I go,
what?
Oh, yeah. But look, listen, I was a candidate once upon a time. I got told called a carpetbagger. You're from New York.
Somebody called, not meaning that their country? That's awful.
Well, either from another country or just because you're not from Cambridge. You know,
well,
so
well,
somebody
you have
says
to be you're living not, here if you're running.
But you're not originally from Cambridge.
Oh,
and
give me
are,
a break.
There have always been native Cantabrigians
There's
who
like
would
three
prefer candidates
that, yeah.
to be native
right.
Cantabrigians. I get that, you know, and that's the people you will vote for because that's what you want for your representation.
I like it when they either have participated in the Cambridge schools or their kids went there. I don't care when, you know, that to me is
look,
I like that too.
You know, there are some candidates who didn't even show up here until last year. I'm sorry, but I ain't voting for you if you just showed up here last year, all right? I want somebody who's at least been involved in something.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go to the
and
minor
more than
leagues.
One issue.
You want to go to the majors?
Yeah.
Put in some time in Greenville. And you know, you got to do. You got to play the minor leagues a little bit. Were you involved with a neighborhood group?
I,
were you involved
you
with
can
an issue?
Wait, Greenville. I mean, we're not. We are not the major league here. I'm
I
sorry.
Know, I know. I know.
It
I
is
know.
Just. I mean, I know it's very desirable. You get paid.
We are a little pond.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
By the way, yeah. I mean, what do they get paid? Newton, where all this is happening, they get paid. They're fighting to get a $10,000 raise.
It's true.
Anyway,
it's true.
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny how with all this sort of this purity test, you know, and accusations of you know putting scarlet letters on people, which
terrible.
Was never my intention, certainly. But the thing is if you noticed how a lot of candidates have been completely let off the hook, they haven't had to say a damn thing about what they actually would do if they were elected.
Right, because they're letting
out. Boy, they signed that bicycle pledge, or they signed on to this, you know, this overlay, or against this overlay, or whatever. It's like, but who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you, you know? So anyway, that's my appeal is...
And we didn't get a chance to, but if you have a chance to look at the Globe, local elections hinge on housing this fall. It really talks about us. It talks about Newton. It talks about Revere.
Yeah,
very interesting article. Anyway.
But, you know, but again, the wonderful world of proportional representation is you pick what issues are important to you. You pick out what constituency you think you want to be a part of, whether it's geographic, issue-based, or whatever.
But
vote. And
to be an educated voter.
Yep. So, anyway.
Next week's election, so we may be doing special election coverage. Bye.